Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station. 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having that opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning, Acadiano. Welcome to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're being simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Sports Network. You give us a call today if you'd like on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Got a lot to get to on today's show. Got a jam-packed lineup of guests for you. In the 3 o'clock hour, we'll have Jacques Doucette. He's going to come on and talk a little LSU, a little Saints for us. That'll help us close out today's show. Well, also, to start off the 3rd hour, Les East from Crescent City Sports. Saints rookie minicamp begins. He'll give us his insight on what's going on there, what players he's looking for to make an impact this week, or maybe try to stand out. In the 2nd hour, we'll be talking to Danny Morang. He covers the Portland Trail Blazers. That's been one of the more entertaining series in this NBA playoffs. We'll speak to him. We'll also talk to James Yasko. Astros got a big victory last night. They took the rubber match versus the Kansas City Royals, and they're kind of trending in the right direction right now. But we will ask him about Colin McHugh, who got roughed up yet again. We'll talk about that with James Yasko of the Lima Time podcast in the 2nd hour. And in this hour, later this hour, we'll talk to our good friend John Marques from the Town Talk on a bevy of topics. Pelicans hiring one of the best trainers in the league, LSU baseball situation, and much, much more. But we'll start things off with LSU. They begin their 3-game set this weekend tonight. Instead of it being the Friday, Saturday, Sunday traditional 3-game series, LSU is going to be starting their series tonight at Arkansas. LSU is ranked number 15 in the country, 30-19 overall, 14-10 in the SEC. They're playing at Fayetteville. Arkansas is one of the best teams, not only in the SEC, they're atop the SEC West standings, but they're also second overall in the Southeastern Conference. They're the number 4 ranked team in the country, 37-12 overall, with an impressive 17-7 mark in SEC play. First pitch will be at 6:30 tonight. Pre-game show will start at 6 o'clock. So programming reminder today, the good brother Ben Love, host of Bumper to Bumper Sports. He's going to take care of you from 4 to 6, live from the tap room at River Ranch. He's going to lead you in to LSU pregame and then first pitch tonight at 6:30. We still do not know how LSU is going to respond. They lose a tough one over the weekend to Ole Miss. In particular, the Sunday game was atrocious, where they rally there in the bottom of the 9th only to give up 4 runs in the top of the 10th to lose the game and let Ole Miss win the first series against LSU in Baton Rouge since 1982. They respond by getting absolutely curb stomped by Louisiana Tech at home at Alex Box Stadium. The pitching's a mess. The lineup's not being consistent. We talked about it yesterday, and we will give a final tally on the poll question that we asked yesterday here on the show, whether or not LSU has a leadership problem. So how are they going to respond? And they have an opportunity to make a statement, to bounce back, to kind of turn around their season here by taking out one of the best teams in the SEC. And this is traditionally a series that LSU has owned. They lead the all-time series 73-32. They have won 13 of their last 14 SEC regular season series, including the past seven in a row versus Arkansas. So they have owned Arkansas, is the best way to say that, including winning 2-1 last season at Alex Box Stadium. They also, if you remember, defeated Arkansas in last season's SEC tournament semifinal round in Hoover. So they beat them last season during the regular season. They beat them in the SEC tournament. They've owned them of late, winning 13 of their last 14 regular season series against them, including the past seven in a row. That should tell you that, hey, this is a team that this is the best team for LSU to face. The problem is, and our friend Ron Higgins talked about this yesterday, seems like the Arkansas folks are kind of licking their chops. These teams in the SEC are not intimidated by LSU. LSU can come out there and wear the purple and gold, and they can have Tigers on there, and they can have the LSU logo on there. These guys are not intimidated. Ole Miss proved that over the weekend. Once again, Ole Miss had not won in Baton Rouge since 1982. That did not matter. It's also has not mattered this season against in-state competition. Southern, McNeese, Northwestern State, UL, didn't matter to them. Even when LSU is down, every team is still going to step up and give their best effort because it's LSU. They don't care if LSU is struggling. They don't care if LSU's pitching rotation is an absolute mess. They do not care. They do not care. They're going to come and bring their A game. They're going to give 110%, whatever cliche that you would like to use. That's what's going to occur anytime LSU steps on the field against someone. They have to have the same mentality. And that's been an issue this season for them. We saw it the other night at the box against Tech. We saw it over the weekend against Ole Miss. We've seen it on the road at Missouri. We've seen it in the midweek losses against Southern and McNeese State and Northwestern State. We saw it in the opening game against one of the worst teams in the SEC at Alabama. They're not consistent with their focus and their energy. They're just not. Perfect opportunity for them to do that this weekend. Because once again, as the SEC standings currently stand, LSU's on the outside looking in to earn that first-round bye at the SEC tournament, the single elimination portion of the tournament. They have work to do. And they only have the Arkansas series this weekend, starting tonight, live right here on 103.7 The Game, and then wrapping up the regular season at home versus Auburn. Can they turn around? Is there a sense of urgency for this LSU team? This is what longtime skipper Paul Maneri had to say. Quote, Arkansas is an outstanding team, so we've got a great challenge in front of us. We're a little bit shorthanded with our pitching, but we're going to go up there and battle as hard as we can. It's a great environment, and I think our guys are looking forward to it. Hopefully we'll get good performances out of our starting pitchers, and our bullpen will be rested and ready to face a very good Arkansas team. Hopefully, we'll get good performances out of our starting pitchers. Hopefully. This is the rotation for this weekend for LSU. They're going to throw out the sophomore Roddy Mikhail Hilliard again tonight. He's 0-2 on the season with an ERA of 4.59. He's going to be taking on Arkansas's junior righty, Isaiah Campbell. who's one of the better pitchers in the SEC, 8-1 on the season, ERA of around 2.5. He loves chalking up strikeouts as well. He's got 87 on the year. Game two, Friday night, LSU's going to put out Eric Walker. 4-4 on the year, ERA of 5.30. He's going to be facing off with Arkansas's freshman star, the big lefty, Patrick Wicklander. Patrick's 5-1 with an ERA of under 4. Also 71 strikeouts. Then game three on Saturday will be Landon Marceau for LSU. 3-2 overall in the season with an ERA north of 7. Arkansas has not announced who their pitcher is going to be for game three. So two things stand out to me. Hilliard has to pitch better because Campbell has legit stuff. He's going to attack the batters. And LSU's lineup, which one game, they are sensational. It seems like every person is getting on base. The next game, they get 3 hits. You can't struggle against Isaiah Campbell. Like, they're going to have to come out, and this is not fair to the lineup, but because of the inconsistencies from the pitching staff of LSU and where they're at right now, the lineup specifically is going to have to step up for, like, Mikhail Hilliard. His ERA is around 5. So the lineup is going to have to step up not only for Mikhail Hilliard tonight in Game 1, but also for Eric Walker in Game 2. And let's be honest, he's going to have to do it for Game 3, too, for Marceau. LSU's three starting pitchers have ERAs of 5, at least 5, all the way up to 7. So you're going to need some run support because you're going to hope that these starting rotation can at least get you to maybe the fourth or fifth inning, and then you can hand it over to maybe Zach Hess or Todd Peterson or whoever they go out throw out there that's going to eat up innings. The pitching matchups favor Arkansas. They have the better pitching staff. They're the better team. They're the better team. Right now, LSU is 14-10 in the SEC. They're a full 3 games behind Arkansas in the Western Division standings. If they lose this series, not only can you count out the SEC West title, you can count, go ahead and eliminate them from getting a first-round bye at the SEC tournament. They drop this series. They drop 2 of 3. They're going to find themselves having to go the long way to an SEC tournament championship and put themselves dangerously in position of not hosting an NCAA regional. They drop 2 of 3 starting tonight with this weekend series in Fayetteville. They probably play themselves out of an NCAA regional. Auburn is not going to help them. They're going to have to more than likely sweep Auburn and then make a run in the SEC tournament to get an NCAA regional. So we'll see. Arkansas is a formidable opponent. They're number 3 in the SEC in team batting average. The Razorbacks have hit 64 home runs, the second highest total in the league. So the Razorbacks lineup is probably going to be looking to tee off on LSU's pitching. And if LSU's pitching doesn't come out focused, ready to go, and if that bullpen isn't ready to come in and eat up those middle innings to help the starting pitching, it could be a long weekend in Fayetteville for the LSU Tigers and Paul Maneri. So we'll see. We'll see if they can turn things around. But they have to do it now. There's no better time than now. When we come back here at RP3 and Company, NBA playoffs recap from last night, right here on 103.7 The Game.
Bucks. Hand off to Irving. Screen by Horford. Kyrie Irving whips it out. Steal by Giannis. He's got a bust out. Here he goes. Slam dunk. 65-52 Bucks. Turnover out at the top. And a bust out for Giannis.
Giannis and the Bucks. Who had them in the Eastern Conference Finals when the season began? Raise your hand. No one. Not even Milwaukee fans had that happen. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parsa III, here on 103.7 The Game. Eastern Conference Finals, or at least half of them, is now set. That's because the Milwaukee Bucks just swatted away the Boston Celtics. 116-91 last night. Boston took the first game by more than 20 points in this series. Boston swept its first-round opponent and then came out and curb-stomped Milwaukee and frustrated Giannis in Game 1 of this series. And then the Bucks responded by winning four straight games. Boston, the trendy pick to go not only to the Eastern Conference Finals, but also represent the Eastern Conference and possibly face the Golden State Warriors in the NBA Finals, doesn't even get out of the second round of the playoffs. The Greek Freak had 20 points, 8 rebounds, and 8 assists, kind of a ho-hum performance for him. He's more than likely going to win the league MVP this year. But it was a balanced performance. Everyone chipped in. The Bucks had 7 players in double figures last night. 7. Chris Middleton chipped in 19 points and 8 boards. Eric Bledsoe finished with 18 points. Now Milwaukee waits the winner of the Philadelphia-Toronto series. The Raptors are up 3-2 heading into Game 6 tonight. It's the first Eastern Conference final for the Milwaukee Bucks since 2001. Giannis had this to say afterwards. At the end of the day, we realize we've never been there before. We're really hungry to achieve our goals. That's all we care about. As long as we play hard, we really don't care about what anybody has to say. I like that. The Celtics clamped down on Giannis for most of the game. Like I said, kind of had a ho-hum performance for his standards. But that didn't matter because Middleton stepped up, Bledsoe stepped up, George Hill stepped up. Nico Maritek stepped up. You know, remember him? He used to play for the Pelicans. Dill Demps traded him away, traded a first-round pick to get him, and then traded him away for a second-rounder. Now Maritek is going to the Eastern Conference Finals. And Dill Demps is out of a job. Kyrie Irving continued to struggle and had a terrible series. He scored 15 points for Boston. The Celtics shot 31% from the field. Jason Tatum and Marcus Morris each had 14 points. Irving went 6 for 21. The quote-unquote leader of the Boston Celtics, the guy that's supposed to be leading them to the promised land, struggled all series long. His entire season has been him kind of taking shots at his teammates in the media. There's been grumblings coming out of the Boston media market that he's not happy there. And you could tell this chemistry for the Boston Celtics was off all season long. They were great last year, remember? Irving got hurt. Then they make the run to the Eastern Conference Finals with all the young guys. Irving comes back, and Hayward comes back off of injury, and they could just never gel. And a lot of that has to do with Kyrie, because Kyrie wanted to get out of Cleveland. He wanted to be his own man. He wanted to be the leader of his own team. And the team actually plays better and is a better cohesive unit without him. So that tells you about leadership. So Milwaukee moves on. They await the winner of the Philly-Toronto series. Once again, the Raptors are up 3-2 in that series. Then there was the other game. the game that everyone, the series that everyone's paying attention to, Houston, Golden State.
Curry will bring the ball up. Listen to this Oracle crowd. Curry and Thompson, screen and roll. Thompson now. Curry gets it left side. Jumper, no good. Looney, offensive rebound to Iguodala to Thompson. Loads up a three. Got it!
Warriors win 104-99 over the Houston Rockets. They now lead that Western Conference semifinal series 3-2. What's interesting is that Kevin Durant went down with an injury. People thought at first that it might have been an Achilles. Reports then came out that it was a calf strain. His timetable to return is unknown at this time. Obviously, this game was the late game last night on the West Coast, so there's no information, no new information as of right now. But with Kevin Durant injured and out of the game, Klay Thompson still found a way to help lead Golden State to the victory. Klay, who's been kind of quiet from some of this series, he scored 27 points, including that key layup with 4.1 seconds left. Steph Curry said this afterwards about the Durant injury. Quote, honestly, it was a little deflating for a second, and then we rallied. Durant has an MRI scheduled for today after he strained his right calf in the third quarter. His status for Game 6 on Friday has yet to be determined, but doesn't seem promising. Durant limped to the locker room after falling awkwardly after a baseline jumper. The two-time reigning NBA Finals MVP finished with 22 points, 5 rebounds, and 4 assists. James Harden paced the Rockets in the losing effort with 31 points. They now return back to Houston to try to stave off elimination. What's interesting here, though, is it very much feels like last season, when the Rockets were up 3-2 on the Golden State Warriors in the Western Conference Finals, and then what happened? Chris Paul got injured. So the Rockets have the ultimate opportunity here to redeem themselves and to pay back Golden State for what happened to them in a similar circumstance. So we'll see if the Rockets can pull that out on Friday. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, talk to John Marques of the Town Talk and thetowntalk.com right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III. Cody Schuetz is on the ones and twos. And we're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1.
Good morning, Raymond.
That's right. I was...
shut up.
So, your boy, RP3, before we get to our next guest, your boy RP3 was a little grumpy this morning. Just went right through the show and forgot to give love to my producer. So we hugged it out, though. We hugged it out. And,
by hugged it out, he means we had a Yampapai strap match in the back of the studio here during that break. And it's all good now. It's fine. Raymond.
We're good times. I got someone texting me at 6:30 in the morning. I don't know who these people are. They're like, you know I got a show on, right?
Happy Thursday.
It's time for us now to welcome on our first guest of the day. He likes to have a good laugh from time to time. He is a senior columnist for The Town Talk and thetowntalk.com, a former long-time sports editor and then managing editor at that newspaper as well. It's our good friend, John Marques. John, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing well, and, I've never experienced a grumpy Ray Parch in my life. I don't know what Cody's talking about, you know. I didn't think that was possible for you.
And if my wife's listening right now, she'll be calling in shortly and saying, I don't know what you're talking about either. Yeah, I've been known to be a little grumpy from time to time.
A little?
Oh, there it is, a little. A little. And see, John can say that because John actually officiated my wedding, so he knows. John, so let's start off. I want to start off with a little college baseball talk this morning, my old friend. And a lot of LSU fans are very angry right now, and a lot of LSU fans are starting to call for Paul Maneri and thinking that it's time for a change and that the situation has gotten to a point like it did with Les Miles, with the football program. What say you to that?
You know, I'll be honest with you. A few years ago when Texas came after Paul Maneri, and I don't know if it was they hired Augie Garrido or to replace Augie Garrido, I don't think LSU fans would have been disappointed had he moved to Austin. You know, and I can see where they're starting to wonder about him, but I don't think it's a fair comparison with Les Miles. I mean, college baseball is such a different beast than college football, where you only have, you know, a dozen games to, and you know, you can't afford a slip up for the most part. College baseball is not like that. And, you know, I hate to say it, you know, I know you don't like losing to Louisiana Tech, you don't like losing to Tulane, you don't like losing to the Cajuns on those midweek games. But really, the midweek games don't matter. They never did to Skip Bartman. He used them to, you know, to get the non-starters or to try to find some pitching depth to help them for the postseason. That's what the midweek games are for an LSU, for a top-level program. Now, for Tech and some of the others, yeah, it's a time to showcase. It's a time to play in front of maybe your largest crowd of the season. So you might be up for it a little bit more, and it's baseball. You know, one-game series, sometimes the better team, better program's not going to win. It's baseball. It happens. That's why postseason is a double elimination. The best teams usually rise to the top. So I wouldn't be too concerned about the midweek losses. I mean, I go back to when Skip Bartman was there. He didn't put that much emphasis on the wins and losses. He was looking for the development of the postseason. And I believe it was around 97, the 97 season, they were defending national champions. And Louisiana College, NAIA school up here in Pineville, went into Alex Box Stadium and beat LSU. First time an NAIA school has ever beaten an NCAA Division I national champion in any sport. It happens. It's baseball. I mean, and look at Florida. Florida's been the fourth straight College World Series, and they may not make the an NCAA regional this year. You know, they're 9-15 in the SEC. They may not even make the SEC tournament. It happens.
And John, the other point I'd like to make on that, and I know LSU fans may be frustrated, but the era that we're in for college baseball has changed as well. I think maybe LSU fans got a little spoiled for the 90s run that Skip had, where he won five national championships in an 11, 12-year period. And that was great, but Gorilla Ball is long gone. And that era of college baseball is long gone. And you don't have teams like a Texas or like a Cal State Fullerton or like an LSU or even Miami had that great success for a long time. They don't dominate the sport. There's so much parity mm-hmm. in college baseball. You're not going to see a team dominate from start to finish anymore. It's just not how the sport has evolved. Are the expectations a little too high, I guess, is my question.
Yeah, they probably need to be reset. Like I said, it's not football where you can see that dominance. You know, you go back to when back in the 70s, you know, it was Southern Cal. It was basically you had to be on the coast. You had to be California, Southern California, maybe into Arizona a little bit, or Miami. And then when Skip came to LSU in the late 80s and started getting it rolling, they were like the first non-coast team program to put a lot into baseball. And Skip was just was the greatest college baseball coach in history. You saw what he did. Well, now other programs, other schools, especially in SEC and elsewhere, are putting resources into baseball where they didn't do it back in the 80s. They didn't do it in the 90s. I mean, I look at Kentucky. Kentucky opened a $51 million baseball stadium this year. I mean, it's Kentucky putting $51 million into baseball. Unheard of 10 years ago. and some people say that's one reason why John Cohen left Kentucky and went to Mississippi State, was he kept getting promised that they were going to have a baseball program, but new baseball facility, and they never happened. Well, now you got all these schools that are putting resources into baseball that have never done it before. And the irony is, yeah, the gorilla ball is gone, but, you know, you look at this LSU baseball team, one of the knocks on when they've gotten to the College World Series, even under Mannary, is they could score runs up there. Well, part of it had to do with the new stadium. You know, this LSU baseball team is not playing gorilla ball by any means. They may actually be better suited for a run in Omaha if they can get there than some of his previous teams. So, you know, if I was an LSU baseball fan, I'd step back from the ledge. Let's see how the season plays out.
Talking to John Marcase of the Town Talk and thetowntalk.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline here on RP3 and Company. John, I also think, you know, it's also a situation where be careful what you ask for, because I think people forget where the program was at under Smoke Laval. I like Smoke, and so did you. He's a good guy. Skip Bertman, longtime assistant coach. He did wonders up at ULM, right? He goes to LSU. He gets them to two College World Series. Now, they had early exits, those two trips to Omaha, and then the wheels fell off with his own recruiting, and the program kind of went down. So it can always be worse. And I still argue that the majority of the makeup of this team is still last year's team that struggled and had to make a run just to get into an NCAA regional, where they lost in Corvallis and nearly lost to Northwestern State in that regional. So I know they had the number one recruiting class, and I know they have Paul Mannary, and I know they have these guys that came back, but the majority of the team is still the same team that had an up-and-down season last year too. Could it just be possibly leadership, not by the coaching staff, but by the players? Is there, do you feel like there's possibly a lack of leadership when it comes to that locker room?
Yeah, you know, I hate to say that, because, one, I don't cover them on a day-to-day basis, so it's unfair to say that. You know, they have been hammered by injuries. You know, I just wonder if, you know, Paul Mannary's not in any danger of losing his job, but you wonder if maybe he'll be told, all right, you need to change your coaching staff. You know, for whatever reason, ever since Andy Cannizzaro left for Mississippi State, you know, the hitting's gone south. They haven't hit like they had under him. Has Alan Dunn run his course as the pitching coach? You just don't know. So I could see some changes, you know, on the staff possibly after the season. But as far as leadership in the locker room and stuff like that, I mean, they still got some. From everything I've read, everything I've observed when they were in high school, such, they still have some pretty good leaders. You know, it's just, you know, when you have a rash of injuries, sometimes that, you know, there's no amount of leadership in the locker room is going to take care of injuries.
John, let me ask you this. One more question about LSU baseball, and then we'll move on to the New Orleans Pelicans, because I want to get your thoughts on that, especially the column that you wrote this week for the Town Talk and thetowntalk.com. LSU baseball, you don't think Paul is on the hot seat. From your opinion, from your standpoint, what do you think they need to do? Do you think they at least get to an NCAA regional to kind of salvage the season? Because expectations were, start off the season ranked number one, number two in the country. Vanderbilt was right there with them. Vandy is atop the SEC. They're not having any problems. They're a top five program. LSU is not. So what does LSU need to do to kind of salvage this season and maybe quiet that conversation, those screams, those people yelling for Paul Mannary to be on the hot seat?
Well, you know, I mean, they're still 14-10 in the SEC. They have a big series this weekend in Arkansas. Let's see how they do at Arkansas. Arkansas is a top five program, top five team this year. And then they close out next weekend with Auburn. So there's a chance they can, at worst, you're looking at, you know, 3-3 to finish the SEC. Let's see how they do in the SEC tournament. Let's see how they do in the regional before you call this season a failure or a disappointment. I mean, Mannary has been in this situation before. Right, they finished strong, won the SEC tournament, and then it launched him into a deep run in the NCAA. So, you know, I think even hosting the NCAA regional right now is the best they could do. They're probably on the border of it. So, you know, I don't think he's in any danger. I can see a big change in the coaching staff, and that may be what they need.
We're talking with John Marques of the Town Talk on thetowntalk.com. Here on the Arco Equipment Hotline on RP3 and Company. John, let's switch over to your column that you wrote this week. I found it interesting. I didn't think I'd see the day where the hiring of a trainer for an NBA franchise would be heralded as much as what David Griffin has done as the new front office leader of the New Orleans Pelicans. Why were you so impressed by the hire, and why do you think it's so significant for the franchise moving forward?
Just look, you know, ever since they moved to New Orleans from Charlotte, they've been plagued by injuries. And it seems like even with Anthony Davis, he was always banged up. You looked at DeMarcus Cousins. I mean, you know, he was playing in a faster tempo than he'd ever had when he came over a couple of years ago, and he blew out his Achilles. Look at Elfrid Payton. You know, he missed half the season with injuries. They've just been plagued by injuries, and it's I don't understand why that has been. But one of the NBA national writers up in Philadelphia looked at the
believes that we do believe we lost John there.
Thinking he hit the mute button on his phone. It happens a lot.
It does. Sometimes
we'll holler back at it.
Sometimes I forget to turn my microphone on.
This is true.
And Cody has to wave at me. What are you doing? We will effort John to finish his point. He does have an excellent column up about the David Griffin making his first hire with the Pelicans front office, hiring the esteemed and heralded trainer away from the Phoenix Suns. That can be found on thetowntalk.com right now if you'd like to go check that out. So we'll try to get John back on the phone so he can finish making his point there. And it is interesting also, not only are we talking positively about the hiring of a trainer. We're talking positively about the hiring of a trainer. We're also talking positively about hiring someone away from the Phoenix Suns. Because when I think of achievement in basketball on the professional level, I have not thought of the Phoenix Suns in quite a long time. But this hire, this gentleman is one of the best in the business. John, welcome back here on the Arco Equipment Hotline. No, that's fine. You were in the midst of talking to your point. You're saying that the Philadelphia sports writers looked at the injury issues that have been occurring and everything like that. You were talking about how significant this hire is by David Griffin.
Right. And, you know, it's, you know, for whatever reason, they've been plagued by a bunch of injuries. Anthony Davis, Elfrid Payton missed half the season last year. And you go back to when they first came. And, you know, if you look at NBA players, they want to play. And if you're looking around and you see some of the changes that are being made in New Orleans, David Griffin, well-respected. And when David Griffin was in Phoenix working with Aaron Nelson, the trainer he just hired, that's when the Suns were, you know, they were battling for, you know, going to the Western Conference Finals each year. Steve Nash prolonged his career, prolonged Grant Hill. Shaquille O'Neal spoke highly of him. You got to change the culture. You got to do it somehow with the Pelicans and make it where it's a destination. Because for whatever reason, even when Anthony Davis was the star attraction, nobody wanted to come and play with him in New Orleans. Maybe there are other reasons other than just Anthony Davis.
John, appreciate the insight. Everyone go check out John's latest column. It can be found on thetowntalk.com. John, enjoy the rest of your week, my friend, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Ray. You too.
It's John Marques, Town Talk, towntalk.com, talking a little LSU baseball with us in New Orleans Pelicans. Starting off the day on the right foot. We will wrap up this first hour of RP3 and Company after this break, right here on 103.7 The Game.
Still counting crows. We were doing this bit earlier.
I wasn't expecting it, though. You caught me off guard.
It does. The instrumental here from Counting Crows, You change it just ever so slightly. It sounds like a country song.
It does.
This is Counting Crows. Go figure that.
I want to say he had like a solo country record. Or am I thinking of Darius Rucker? Another
Darius. Right, Darius Rucky. That's what I call him. We're cool. We're on a first. So
I
Rucky.
Call him Rucky.
Me and Rucky, we hang out. He's the only South Carolina fan that I'm cool with. No, Darius Rucker, Hootie and the Blowfish, entertainer of the 90s was Hootie and the Blowfish. So the entire decade, they were entertaining. And now he's like, I'd say top tier country artist doing his thing. Wagon Wheel, great song.
You could not escape. What was that? Cracked Rear View Mirror.
This is my so long comeback song. Yeah, I think that's the one. But this right here, this is money all day.
My man.
Go back. Here's a fun one for you. Go back and listen to some old Hootie and the Blowfish.
It sounds like country.
And it hits you all of a sudden. You're like, wait a minute. You're like, the whole time.
That transition was not.
No, it's pretty seamless.
Especially for Darius. It just went right into. Just change up the music bed a little bit and you're fine.
I mean, it's impressive what he was able to do. I mean, it's in the world of like professional wrestling, there are guys like Hulk Hogan teeters there as he was Hulkamania. Then he tried to reinvent himself as Hollywood Hulk Hogan, and that worked to a certain extent with the NWO and all that. That sort of worked. You have guys like Chris Jericho, who he was a kind of circus performer type guy with all the frilly stuff on his pants and this and that. And then he transitioned into the Codebreaker, Y2J, and now he's this crazy guy with face paint all over him in Japan wearing like Legion of Doom jackets and things. And he's more popular now than he's maybe ever been. And so it just goes to show that if you can continue to be creative and reinvent yourself and kind of relaunch yourself to the world, then you can stay relevant for multiple decades.
I like that.
That's just that has nothing to do with sports, but it just, maybe it does though. I don't know. Maybe it
does. Well, it does. Cause you bring up a good point, because reinventing yourself, I think that's a good way of describing these guys that are going through the draft process or the combine process for the NBA. Because a lot of these guys have to figure out a way to be better and to fit into what the NBA does.
Yeah, any stigma you might have of yourself from college, you need to be able to get rid of that.
Naz Reid and Tremont Waters, by the way, have been officially invited to the NBA Combine. They're the only two LSU Tigers that got invited. Naz Reid is expected to be a first-round draft pick. Tremont Waters, not so much. But Reid and Waters are among the 66 players that have accepted invitations to the NBA Draft Combine. Reid earned all SEC freshman honors this year, but the knock on him is that he's got to get tougher, he's got to get more physical to play at the next level, and he's got to develop more of a jumper. Tremont Waters was the co-defensive player of the year, but he had a ton of turnovers, and he's a little small. Obviously, he can't grow, reinvent himself that way, but can he cut down on the turnovers and be more disciplined at the point guard position? Yes. Waters also earned honorable mention All-American honors from the AP. So they're part of the group, 2 of 66. Let's see if they can make an impact, make a good impression, and have NBA teams want to invest their future on those two guys. Also, no LSU players accepted invites to the G League Elite Camp. So expect guys like Skylar Mays, Emmett Williams, Javonte Smart. Those guys are going to go back to LSU. They're going to play for Will Wade next year. They didn't go to the G League Elite Camp. They're not going to the NBA Combine. They're going to reinvent themselves by going back to school and learning something, becoming more complete players. Plus, hell, Skylar Mays is going to become a doctor. So, I mean, he doesn't really need the NBA. Just saying. First hour in the books coming up. We'll talk to Danny Morang. He covers the Portland Trailblazers right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk to the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. And it's now time for us to head back out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest. He is the co-host of NBC Sports Northwest, as well as Blazers Outsider pregame / postgame show. He's the co-host of the Blazers Edge podcast. It's the one and only Danny Morang. Danny, how are you this morning?
I mean, things would be going a lot better, you know, when we scheduled this. Things were looking good, you know, Blazers, 4 overtime wins, and hopping towards some things, and then, you know, Game 5 comes along and kind of slaps you in the face a little bit. But I'm doing all right, man. How you doing?
Yeah, I can understand that, man. I can understand that. Look, the series is not over by any stretch of the imagination, but let's talk about this series because I want to go back a little bit. You know, I remember when Dame Lillard hit that great shot against the Houston Rockets a few seasons ago in the playoffs and took them out. And yet, I think maybe the national narrative, because of what happened in last year's postseason versus the Pelicans, it seems like Dame and the Blazers are a little under the radar and underrated. As someone who covers the team, does it feel that way to you guys up there in Portland?
Yeah, no, in a weird sense. I mean, everybody around here was thoroughly disappointed with the Blazers' performance against the Pelicans in the playoffs last year. Higher seed, and even if you want to talk about all the difference between, you know, the 3 and the 9 was, you know, 3 games, it's just dumb tight in the West. So I don't really look at seeding. I thought they clearly underperformed in the playoffs. I thought the Pelicans came with a masterclass approach to take Dame out and make everybody else beat him, because that's kind of been the MO, and we're seeing some of that right now in this series. Coming into the season, though, under the radar was a real thing as far as like the national perspective, because even though the Blazers finished with the 3 seed last year, there was numerous publications among all the big groups that had the Blazers missing the playoffs, all because LeBron James came last. And I thought that was a little bit weird, because the playoffs and the regular season are just different beasts, right? Yeah, teams can be built differently for different things. I mean, the Clippers this year were clearly a regular season team, and they were affected there, and they even stole a few off the Warriors in the first round. I mean, it's a different beast. And the Blazers, they add a couple pieces. They don't really lose much. Nurkic, obviously pre-injury, was much better this year. So it was a little bit weird. I don't think it was necessarily like the chip on the shoulder that Dame and the Blazers have had in the past, but it was a little weird to see them overlooked from a national perspective and kind of knocked them out after really not many changes, and you finish with, you know, 50-plus wins.
Danny, talk a little bit about, you know, I know nationally speaking, you know, growing up in the South and then also in the Midwest, you know, I knew of the Trailblazers because of Clyde the Glide and Porter and all those guys, those great late 80s, early 90s teams. And even though they've had success since then, it is very much kind of a team that's forgotten about. And people go, well, it's a small market and it's a smaller market. But yet we talk about Oklahoma City a whole lot nationally. and we really don't talk about Portland all that much. Does that give this team and the way they conduct themselves a little bit of chip on their shoulder, not in a bad way, but in a good way?
Yeah, I think so. And Dave has spoke on this quite a few times over the last few years. And he's a guy who operates with a chip on his shoulder. And realistically, I mean, speaking of OKC, Russ was a guy who, you know, called out Dame for quote unquote complaining about missing the play or missing an all-star selection and things of that nature. And Dame has become, and I think it's becoming known nationally, no matter where you are right now, known as maybe the best leader in the NBA. Multiple teammates who've gone on to play in other places, at Davis with the Nets and Will Barton, obviously now with the Nuggets, and basically anybody who comes into contact with Damian Lillard, even LaMarcus Aldridge. I mean, these guys are all coming out talking about how Dame is maybe the most underappreciated and best leader in the NBA right now. And I think that reflects on this franchise right now in a way that they just kind of go about their business. And I know it sounds so dumb and so cliche, But that's just kind of the MO that this team has taken over since Dame kind of got the reins when he was drafted. It's kind of what the Blazers, I think, won as well. Sure, they want some of the PR that the Thunder get with the big flashy names with over the years, with obviously with Westbrook and now Paul George with KD and all that kind of stuff. But the Blazers had their run of where they had all that press, and it was in a negative way, which is a lot like what OKC has had lately. The Blazers, obviously not with the turmoil in the locker room that we've seen over the years in OKC, but with the injuries. I mean, Portland was crushed with them, and that's kind of been the franchise tagline now for what feels like, you know, since its existence. You go back, you know, to Walton, track it through Bowie, and everybody knows all that stuff, and Odin and Roy. And so the Blazers, I think, and especially taking on the mantle of their leader, where Dame's not a big talker. There's never been an issue in the locker room since Dame has been here. And I think that's kind of been how they've conducted themselves and kind of carried themselves in his tenure. And they just kind of fly under the radar, and they take that little chip when they can, but they don't force it when they don't have to.
Danny, I want to go back a series to the Oklahoma City series. Entertaining to say the least. I love the confidence to take the shot that he did. He outplayed he outplayed Westbrook that entire series. Mm-hmm. And I love the shot. I also love the fact that we capture that moment where he just looks up to the photographer or to the video camera, and it's just perfect because everyone's mobbing him and he's just looking up, and it's like a meme just came to life.
Oh yeah.
All that momentum from that, did the Trailblazers need that series and need to go toe-to-toe with the Thunder and best Westbrook and Paul George to kind of, I don't know, it sounds silly to say, but kind of reclaim some credibility in the eyes of the national media after what happened last year?
Yeah, so this is where it gets a little bit weird. I'm probably one of the tougher guys on the team in the market. My mantra has always been, if you're not building towards a title, what are you building towards? But I think a lot of that, both local and national, kind of fell the wayside when Nurk's leg snapped. I mean, you get a gruesome injury like that for everybody to see. And you saw the way that this team was playing with him and how good he was. All of a sudden, everybody was willing to hand the Blazers an asterisk this year, because if they went into this series against OKC or Utah, whatever the matchup was going to be, you know, down the stretch, the Blazers were, if they dropped a series in a bad fashion, like even if it was a 4-2 series, they were probably going to undergo some serious changes, because they've been swept in back-to-back playoffs. They had, you know, barely gotten away with it the year before that, and it was very much the time was ticking. And then even with their backs against the wall and all excuses they could have in the world, CJ McCollum being banged up, Nurk breaking his leg, they closed the season on a 14-3 stretch. To finish out the year, they were playing some of their best basketball, and then they came out and they just housed the Thunder, and nobody saw that coming. And now we're getting obviously some reports about Paul George having shoulder surgery, Westbrook having surgery on his hand or his finger. So, I mean, guys are beat up, but I mean, if George is out there and healthy enough to play and drop 30 plus a game and shoot, you know, over 45% three and just be a monster with a shoulder, God, like how much more could he have really given them at that point? But as far as the credibility, yeah, it's such a weird place to find them in right now, because everybody's willing to write them off. As great as CJ is, I don't think CJ is their second most important player. I think that falls to Nurkic because of what he means to the team as far as how they structure the defense and how they kind of keep things going. To lose him and then go out and beat OKC in the fashion they did, that has motivated this market to a point that I have not seen them in probably since 2000. I mean, it's been that big of a deal just because of what this team kind of means is, because this isn't a basketball city, it's not a football city, it's a Blazers city. And I think that kind of permeates the national market when the national stories kind of come in and get scooped up. But the narrative is still yet to be written. It feels obviously a little bit more somber after dropping game 5, but game 6 goes Portland's way and this series gets pushed to 7. I don't think anybody locally or nationally is going to call this season a busted season considering what they've been able to accomplish so far.
Talking with Danny Morang, co-host of the NBC Sports Northwest Blazer Outsiders pregame, postgame show, as well as the co-host of At Blazers Edge podcast here on the Arco Equipment Hotline. Danny, Denver has the slight edge now in this series, but we still have 2 games to go for Portland to pull this out. I know Denver's done a very nice job of kind of slowing down containing Dame. How are they able to do that?
They did everything Billy Donovan did, except they flipped it on its head. So basically, they took a little bit of a page out of the Pelicans playbook, and they're putting at least three sets of eyes on Dame when he's driving to the rim. They're picking him up early. They're taking away his space. You know, the things the Thunder should have done with an incredibly athletic roster and just failed to do. I thought it was a criminal oversight by Donovan the Thunder to kind of let Dame get to where he wanted to. I mean, I don't care where you are, local, national, China, whatever. Dame was a top 10 player in this league. And if you let him step up the shots all series long, he's going to kill you. Mike Malone has figured that out, and he's willing to let C.J. McCollum, Alfred Camino, Maurice Harkless, basically anybody not named Damian Lillard, have theirs and see what they can get. And with the Blazers being shorthanded on the offensive defensive end without Jusuf Nurkić to kind of battle with Jokic, that's put the onus for Lillard to really carry the mantle. And without the support structure of having that guy that they can really, you know, help out on both ends, Jokic is now allowed to cheat a little bit and help over. Paul Millsap does not care one bit about what Al-Farouq Aminu does or doesn't do. I mean, I've gone back and watched the tape. He's giving him 10, 12, 15 feet of airspace. And they're loading up on the weak side to take away whatever Damian Lillard wants to do. One of the counters the Blazers have tried to employ a little bit, they haven't done it as much this series as much as they did in the OKC series, is run pick and roll instead of 25 to 28 feet. They're running it 35 to 38 feet to kind of give Dame some more floor space. But Nuggets have done a really good job of taking away that space early without committing the extra help. And I think that's flustered Dame. And on top of that, Dame's missed some wide-open shots. I mean, everybody missed wide-open shots in Game 5. That's the kind of game you should burn the game tape and move on. But, yeah, it's a weird spot to find him in. I mean, it's obviously weird when you talk about Damian Lillard about having a poor series when he's had, you know, games of 39, 28, 22, where, you know, he's shooting at or around 50 or above in the field. But the big thing that is missing from this series that was there in the OKC series was not just the 37-foot threes, just the three-point shooting overall. He was a nightmare from basically anywhere, anytime he crossed half court. So the Nuggets have done a great job of taking that away. So it would be interesting what Portland's counter to that is in Game 6 when it's make-or-break time back in Portland.
Danny, I have to ask you, if they can pull this out, force a Game 7, win the series, who do you think are they going to face in the Western Conference Finals? I know a lot of people are hoping and praying and wishing to baby Jesus that Houston is going to find a way to pull it out, right? But I don't know. I think we're being lulled into a bit of a slumber there. I just, the way Golden State is built, I just don't see it. And the way Durant's playing, I just don't see the Rockets getting past them. They could. Who knows? Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, like if I could, you know, shoot two teams into the moon, but I mean, it's those two. But you kind of have to take your hat to a team in Houston who, I mean, I despise all of this holy, but they found a way to be physical enough with the Warriors here early on, or in the last two games, to get the Warriors out of their game. And Draymond Green kind of recognized that in the post game the other day about how basically the winners of each game has been the more physical team out there. And that's kind of weird to talk about the Rockets in the sense of a physical team, right? But I mean,
right.
Tucker kind of carries that mantle for him. Aaron Gordon may look like a human teddy bear brought to life, but he likes to kind of bully guys around and body into him on drives.
Well, New Orleans fans would tell you they're surprised that he can even be on the court for more than four games at a time, but continue.
Yeah, I mean, health was a nightmare for him. I loved Gordon when he was coming out of Indiana. He's one of those guys that had a heck of a profile. And, I mean, health has been a problem for him for most of his career, but it feels like over the last couple of years, he's found a way to hit that, you know, that magic 65 to 70 games and stay on the floor. And he's a guy who's not James Harden strong, and as much as I despise Harden's game, he's maybe pound for pound one of the strongest guys in the league. And you throw him out there with P.J. Tucker, who plays, you know, at 6'5", 6'6", like he's 6'9", or 6'10". And you've got a recipe for you can kind of get underneath the skin. You've got Clint Capela out there who likes to bang a little. And granted, he's not a big, heavy boy, but you've got Fareed you can toss out there. So, I mean, listen, the Rockets had the puncher's chance. And if Blazers somehow manage to win the series, hell yeah, I'd rather see them play the Rockets than the Warriors. The Warriors are a human cheat code. I mean, KD had how many looks in Game 4 that just didn't fall for him? Steph had how many looks that just didn't fall for him? That's basketball. I mean, you're not going to get those nights too often, I don't think, against the Warriors. So it's going to be a little bit weird to see how the series plays out. But if the Blazers somehow manage to turn this thing around, I'd much rather see them face the Rockets. Even though entertainment-wise, you probably want to see them, the Blazers and Warriors, because God, I don't want to watch James Harden for 6-7 games. I think that's the best guy on earth. But the flip side of this is Dame does play against the Warriors better than he plays anybody else in the league. And the Blazers probably lose that series. I'm going to rephrase that. The Blazers lose that series. But it the potential for Dame to have, you know, the 45, 50-point games, I think is much higher against the Warriors because of his ties to Oakland and how he usually plays those guys. And the flip side of that is Chris Paul is literally Damian Lillard kryptonite. Damian Lillard does not play. He plays the absolute worst of any of his matchups in his career against Chris Paul. So that's the one thing that always kind of lurks in the back of my head at looking at that potential matchup, the Blazers kind of figure this out. But the Blazers have had success against the Rockets over the last couple of years, so you're kind of weighing those two together and going, I mean, super team or a team full of guys that kind of choke in big-time moments. So this is the long, roundabout way to say Warriors still winning the series.
Danny, man, look, I appreciate you waking up, taking some time out for us. Enjoy the rest of the series, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Sounds good, buddy. Thanks for having me on.
That's Danny Morang, co-host of NBC Sports Northwest Blazers Outsiders pre- and post-game show, as well as the co-host of the Blazers Edge podcast. We got to hit a break here on RP3 and Company. More sports talk next here on 103.7 The Game.
There's the 1-1, and he hits this one well. Right field, going back on it, Owings, looks up. There it goes! A two-run homer for Brantley, and the Astros lead 4-0. Clubs this one to right. That's a no-doubt-about-it home run for Brantley, his second of the ball game. Astros lead 7-0. Michael Brantley now with 9 home runs.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Network, 24-hour sports coverage. Michael Brantley, boy, he's been a terrific pickup for the Houston Astros this year. The Stros DH had himself a heck of a game. 2 home runs, 3 RBIs, and last night's 9-0 win over the Kansas City Royals. That allowed the Astros to take 2 of 3, pick up the series win. Now they're now 22-15 overall on the season. Terrific performance by Brantley, but he wasn't the only one that had himself a heck of a game. Yes, he homered twice, but Brad Peacock pitched 7 innings. And Josh James came in to help complete the 3-hitter as the Astros shut out the Royals last night. Could Peacock become that guy when Colin McHugh has been struggling? Once again, we talked about it on yesterday's show. McHugh started the season strong. First 4 starts looked good. Last 4 starts, he's been shelled. They need a number 3. You got Verlander as your number 1. Behind him, obviously, is Gerrit Cole. And then they were hoping McHugh would be the number 3. But maybe it should be Peacock. Maybe he becomes the number 3. Maybe he gets elevated by the way that he's pitching. He's 3-2 now on the season. He only allowed 3 hits and set a career high last night with 12 strikeouts. That helped the Astros bounce back from that 12-2 defeat on Tuesday. Peacock himself also rebounded from his worst outing of the season when he allowed 7 runs in just 3 2/3 in his previous start. This is what A.J. Hinch had to say, Astros manager. The story of the day for me is the adjustment he made, speaking of Peacock. His delivery out of the windup has much more rhythm, much more energy. The ball came out better. His execution was better. And ultimately, his results were better. That's as good as he's gotten into a game, and he held it his entire outing. It was excellent night for him. Excellent night for Brad Peacock. He could maybe turn things around, maybe take over that number 3 spot, but once again, it was against the Kansas City Royals, who have won 12 games, who are one of the 3 worst teams in all of Major League Baseball. So let's see if Peacock can do this over his next few starts. still a great step in the right direction for him. It also just wasn't Brantley at the plate last night. George Springer, Springer Dinger himself, and Carlos Carrera both homered to give the Astros 16 home runs combined in their past five games. Springer gave Houston an early lead with his major league leading fourth leadoff home run this season and the 28th of his career. It's the second time this week that Springer Dinger led off the game with a home run. He also did it in the 6-4 win on Monday. So, they take 2 of 3 and are heading in the right direction. Now, they'll play another game coming up. They'll start a 4-game series against Texas on Thursday. That starts tonight. Wade Miley, the lefty, is scheduled to pitch for the Stros against Texas starting tonight. We'll talk more Stros with our next guest, James Yasko of the Lima Time Time podcast, right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Sports Network. It's time now for us to head back out to the ARTCO Equipment Hotline as we welcome on our next guest. He is the co-host of the Lima Time Time podcast, diehard Astros fan, and our good friend, the one and only James Yasko. James, how are you doing this morning?
Hey, I'm all right. How are you doing?
Doing great. Doing great. You got to feel pretty good. Your Stros went out there, took 2 of 3 from the Royals, had that inexplicable game on Tuesday. But besides that, they took care of business in a big way. Let's start with the bats because they're hitting home runs at a blistering pace, whether it's Springer or whoever it may be. Last night it was Brantley. Do you expect this power surge to kind of be part of this team's DNA for the entire season?
I think so. You know, I don't think they're going to hit, what is it, like 16 home runs in their last five games. Like, I don't know that that's necessarily the clip that they'll hit them, but it's a good hitting team that makes contact and doesn't strike out a lot, and that's exactly what you want to see. So I think the power is going to come and go, but mainly it's going to be there.
How big of an addition has Brantley been? I mean, you talk about this lineup. We talk about Bregman. We talk about Altuve. We talk about Russ Springer. At Carrera, when he's healthy, is phenomenal. They didn't really need another bat, but they got one, and he's been tremendous.
He's been, I mean, he's basically been what we sort of think of Jose Altuve being. So what Brantley does is he gives your lineup depth, and Altuve's in a pretty decent slump. I think it's his last 18 games he's hitting under 200. That's not going to last the whole year, but Brantley covers up that hole. So Altuve is still a dangerous hitter, and he's got a good eye, and he's going to get his walks, and he's going to hit. But Brantley, at least, you know, he's sort of picking up that slack, and so it's another example of the Astros building depth in order to be able to win some games.
We're talking with James Yasko of the Lima Time Time podcast. James, how do you feel about this? You know, I heard A.J. Hinch recently say this week that, you know, look, they have a lot to be happy about. They're in first place in their division, but they are still not hitting on all cylinders, essentially. That there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. For you, even though this team is in first place, you know, what is that work that still needs to be done? And do you agree with A.J. Hinch that they really haven't reached their potential yet?
I think that's true. You know, I mean, we've seen games. You know, last night was the fourth time this season that the Astros have held their opponent to three or fewer hits, and they lost one of those games. So, you know, I mean, you're going to have instances where you pitch really well, but you can't hit. or you hit really well, but you can't pitch. And so once it fires on all cylinders, you know, then this is a pretty unstoppable team. But I think AJ Hinch needs to say that. You know, I think everyone in the clubhouse knows, like, hey, we're a really good team. And so I think Hinch has to come up with ways to keep them from being complacent. Not that they don't understand what it means to go through a postseason run, but just sort of, you know, giving them challenges throughout the year to stay focused on the task at hand.
James, Carlos Carrera was banged up last year. Really wasn't himself. He sure does look like the old Carlos this season, and he looks even better. How impressed have you been by Carlos's performance this season for the Astros?
I think it's exactly what I expected. I mean, you could look at Correa last year, and you didn't even have to look at exit velocity or anything like that. You just knew, like, that dude was hurt. And the same with Altuve. And the thing that Correa was just god awful when he quote unquote came back from the DL. And there were, I know there were some questions on the burning hellscape that is Twitter.
Burning hellscape.
It's Sorry. Terrible. It's a terrible place. It's the online Sodom and Gomorrah. It's just awful. That, you know, has Correa lost it? Is he ever going to be the same again? Like, the dude's 24, and he has been an elite hitter for way longer in the majors than he was, you know, coming back from injury last year. So, you know, it's impressive. You know, it's good to see, and it's fun to see, but it's not like nobody's like, oh, Correa, he figured it out. He'd already had it figured out. His back just hurt really bad. So, you know, I don't know that anybody looking into yelling about his fiance or anything like that can jump off a bridge.
We're talking with James Yasko, Lima Time podcast co-host. James, let's talk about the rotation. You're set at number one with Verlander. I think Cole's your number two. 3, 4, and 5, though, are interesting. And I want to talk about Colin McHugh because he started off so strong with the first four starts. But his last four starts, he's getting shelled. What's going on with McHugh?
I think it's repeating his delivery. I mean, he had a year in the bullpen, and you know, in the bullpen, you can just sort of let it fly, you know, for right. an inning or two. And when you're seeing guys for the second and third time to the order, it can be a little bit challenging. So I think he'll be fine. I mean, it's not like he's gotten shelled every single time he's gone out there. Like you said, his first four starts were really good. It's just a matter of finding that consistency. And I think that's what Hinch means in when he talks about, you know, the firing on all cylinders. So if everyone can just be consistent, you know, I think we're in for a pretty good year.
What about Brad Peacock? He had a very good performance last night, 7 innings, only 3 hits. He struck out 12, which was a new benchmark for him. But he is coming off a performance before his last start where he got roughed up. He hasn't been consistent so far this year. Is last night just playing against the Kansas City Royals, or could this be a turning point for Peacock early on in the season?
I think it's a turning point. I mean, we saw, what was it, Tuesday night? The Royals can freaking hit. I mean, they put up 12 runs, 2 grand slams. Like, they're the Royals, and they're terrible, but the hitting isn't really their issue. The thing that encourages me most about Brad Peacock is that he went back to the drawing board after that last start where he gave up like 7 runs in 3 2/3, and changed his delivery. And, you know, Brent Strom, the pitching coach, was like, hey, I think you should pitch out, you know, from a full windup. He had been pitching out of the stretch, probably to try to maintain consistency in case he gets sent back to the bullpen. He went to a full windup last night, and, you know, Hinch and Peacock were talking about how the rhythm was a lot better, and he was able to command his pitches a little bit more. So the fact that you've got this dude that really is I mean, if he's your fifth starter, you know, you've got a pretty solid rotation, but he's willing to go back and sort of tinker with things and come out and turn in what is essentially a career start. It has more to do with Peacock than it does the Royals.
What about Wade Miley? He's the Louisiana kid. He's shown some flashes. Is he right now going to be just the number five guy, or could you see him possibly moving up if maybe McHugh keeps struggling and they kind of switch up the rotation a little bit, maybe bump up Peacock to the third spot? Does Wade Miley have a spot as being one of the top four guys on this team, or do you think he needs to be just number five for now?
No, I don't. You know, I think for this group of guys, and maybe this is true for all Major League Baseball teams, you know, you've got your one and two, and that's who you're going to look to in the playoffs. And then hopefully you've got a solid number three, and then four and five give you whatever they can. I think, you know, Miley is of the three. Miley has been the most consistent. And then you probably look at Peacock and McHugh, but I don't know that they look at each other as three, four, five, more as this, it's my turn to pitch. But, you know, I'll say this for Wade Miley. I'm going to the game tonight, and I'm leaving. I teach high school, and I'm leaving like right after school, and I'm going to have to straight up. I live about 3.5 hours from Houston. I got to bust it and then come straight back after the game. So I appreciate that. You know, out of all the matchups I could have seen, would I have wanted to see Verlander or Cole? Yeah, but I've got a 3.5 hour drive after the game. I'm going to go with 2 hour Miley. Like I'm fine. I'll take
2 hour Miley.
He throws short games.
I love James how you broke it down. Well, you know, the guy that better helps me in my schedule and my drive time is Wade. So I'm going to roll with him. That's the guy. I'm going to roll with.
There is, there's a thing going on tonight, and I was asked if I could come, and without giving too much of it away, like I couldn't turn it down. But there's also one night out of the entire baseball season that is a just a logistical disaster, and that's tonight. So you know, it's typical for me personally, but I'll be rolling in about 2 o'clock in the morning, and again I'll be at school at 7:30 tomorrow.
So it's a good thing that we talk to you this morning instead of tomorrow morning, is what you're telling me.
Oh, tomorrow, I don't know that I'd be speaking English.
We're talking with James Yasko. He's the co-host of the Lima Time podcast, all things Astros. By the way, if you want to listen to tonight's opening game of that four-game series against the Texas Rangers, you can listen to it on our sister station, KVOL, first pitch starting at 7 o'clock. James, I have to ask you, what do you think about this Rangers series? Once again, the Rangers have played well against the Astros so far this season, kind of had their number, taken some advantage of some missed opportunities by the Stros. But this is a good four-game series starting tonight. What do you expect to see with the Stros and the Rangers?
I've sort of made my peace with this series that, you know, we've talked about this. I live up here, you know, I live closer to Dallas than I do to Houston. And so, you know, the Astros could win the World Series, again, and all Rangers fans are going to talk about are those four games that they won back in April. So I just sort of made my peace that sometimes, you know, baseball is wonderful for teaching you life lessons. You know, it's a game that you play every day, and sometimes it doesn't go your way. And you can't get too high, you can't get too low. But sometimes evil wins. And I think that's a lesson that we can all take from it. Now, I do expect a four-game sweep. That'd be great.
I like that. I do expect a four-game sweep. James, you're speaking of evil and winning. So, Orbit, I saw on the social media, the Twitterverse, or the Hellscape, as you call it, him posing in the throne of swords for Game of Thrones. If there was a Game of Thrones type of show with Major League Baseball mascots, would Orbit in fact be the king?
I don't know. I think I could see Orbit being the guy that everyone likes but gets his throat cut, you know, in some sort of dramatic twist. I think it's pretty well established that Mr. Met and the Philly Fanatic are mobbed up and they are definitely linked to the mafia, so I don't think you could rule out either one of them, and then they would turn into some sort of turf war. It'd be Chicago, you know, 1923. I'm gonna go with the mobbed up guys being king, but I think Orbit, everyone would be super sad when Orbit, you know, was shot to death from 3 miles away.
Or I'm gonna throw a wild card out at you. As intimidating as Orbit could be, you know, here in Louisiana we do have Pierre the Pelican, and I'm not talking about the new version. I'm talking about the older version, who looked like he was cooking up meth in a bathroom in a trailer park. And so I will throw Pierre out there as a wild card to do some unexpected things in this battle royale of mascots.
What's that, the baby cakes? What's that?
Okay, so we have apparition. We have two. So the Pelicans have the King Cake baby, okay, mascot, which okay. is which when the mascot looks at you, you think, oh, I see my soul leaving me. So
that's
one thing. But then we also have the AAA affiliate down in New Orleans there for the Marlins. That they are the baby cakes, and that baby is all like muscular and looks like Popeye.
Yeah, no, that thing is freaking terrifying. Like I'm all for extremely weird things in professional sports, but that thing is too weird. And I'm a weird guy. That thing is too weird for me. So I think just that thing might win just because of the creep factor. Like you wouldn't see it. You're like, oh, he's.
Why is the baby muscular? No. I don't understand.
How does this baby bench 375? Like, what is going on?
The baby wears a bib that says "I heart King Cakes" that can only be used for wiping the blood of his victims off of his face when he's done with them. So that's what the bib is for.
Yeah, no, I totally believe that.
He also wears a crown that we can only assume he adorned himself with. So anyone who's narcissistic enough to put a crown on themselves, you know, they're probably going to win some sort of
I'm going to bet on. So mascot battle royal, Game of Thrones style. I think we need to make this happen, James. So you with your connections there in the school system in Texas and us over here, we'll make this happen. We'll make it happen. You'll have to get Patrick involved, though. Is that okay? Is that okay to get your co-host involved?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, James, man, look, I appreciate you coming on, making time for us as always. Enjoy the game tonight. Go have yourself a good time. I know you won't get much sleep, but I know you'll enjoy it, and we'll talk to you next week.
Hey, sounds good. Appreciate it.
James Yasko, co-host of the very entertaining and often hilarious Lima Time podcast.
I'm thinking, like, I see what you're saying. Game of Thrones, so like what mascot would sit on the Iron Throne at the end of it all?
Yeah.
But I think it would be better, if that's the prize, I'm cool with that, but we should do it Hunger Games style. We should lock them all in like some sort of arena.
Oh, there we go.
And then fill that arena with other weapons and things. So the end game can be, you know, yeah, you get to sit on the throne as king of the mascots, but I think we should get to that Hunger Games style or Battle Royale style.
And we can create some type of mascot Infinity Gauntlet.
I want the Infinity Gauntlet, though. I don't want to give it to them.
Infinity Gauntlet himself. My man.
I've been known in high school to don a Hornet mascot costume, or just that one, not two. But it maybe has happened before.
Oh, man. When we come back here at RP3 and Company, we're going to wrap things up here with the second hour. Coming up, third hour strong. We got two guests, Les East and Jacques Doucette, coming up right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, 24 hours of sports coverage. Reminder, today, the good brother, Ben Love, will be at live from the tap room at River Ranch from 4 to 6 p.m. He's going to lead you up into LSU pregame, starts at 6 right here, then first pitch at 6:30. Remember, the three-game set with Arkansas on the road in Fayetteville is a Thursday through Saturday series instead of the traditional Friday through Sunday series. So game one will be tonight. We already told you earlier that Mikhail Hilliard will be taking the bump for LSU as they try to get things back on track after losing last weekend's series to Ole Miss and being embarrassed by Louisiana Tech at the box on Tuesday. We've said this before. We led the show with this. LSU does lead this all-time series, like 73-32. They have dominated Pig Suey. They've won 13 of their last 14 SEC regular season series with the Razorbacks, including the past seven in a row. And last year, they took the regular season series 2-1, And then they also beat Arkansas in the SEC tournament. So they own Arkansas. But Arkansas is a top five team that's licking their chops. And they're looking to put a feather in their cap because beating LSU, even an LSU team that's maybe fading or struggling, is still something that teams are striving for. Pitching matchup tonight, once again, will be the sophomore righty for the Tigers, Mikhail Hilliard, 0-2 ERA of 4.49, going against Isaiah Campbell. He's the ace of that Arkansas staff, 8-1 with an ERA of 2.54.
That was my question, if that was their ace. Cause
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. Ole Miss didn't throw their best guy on Friday.
No. 87 strikeouts. So he's going to come. He's going to attack. He's an aggressive pitcher. So we'll see if the lineup can take advantage of that and see if Hilliard can turn back the clock and go back to his form that he showed last season. Quickly, Cody, we had the Twitter poll question up yesterday.
Yep.
We asked, is there a leadership problem with this LSU baseball team? What did the people say?
3-1, 75% say yes.
Wow, 75% say yes. We'll throw up a new Twitter poll question here in a few moments. Does LSU need to win this series to secure hosting an NCAA regional? That'll be your question. Please go vote on the 103.7 The Game Twitter account. When we come back here, we'll start off the third hour talking to Les East. Saints rookie minicamp starts. He'll give us the lowdown right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidifying everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Ridge and Cajun hoop star Elfrid Payton.
But it's definitely a boost for you, you know, when you look up in the face and you see your mom, see your head, night in and night out, it's just different. I encourage everybody to be an opportunity to play at home, to do it, it's very fulfilling.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to the third hour of RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, 24 hours of sports coverage, news, talk, and game coverage. Give us a call on the Arco Equipment Hotline if you'd like, 337-706-0111. But right now, we're going to head out on the Arco Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest. He covers the New Orleans Saints and the New Orleans Pelicans for CrescentCitySports.com. He joins us every Thursday at this time. It's our good friend, Les East. Les, how are you this morning, brother?
I'm doing well, Raymond. How are you?
I am doing well. Let's get right to it, man. Rookie minicamp. I know it's, look, in the grand scheme of things, it's not really that significant, right? It's simply letting the rookies put on some pads, go through a couple of drills, maybe learn the playbook a little bit, and then we go into the OTAs period and everything like that. But it is exciting for the players involved and for the fan base to get their first glimpse at some of these younger players and hear what the coaching staff has to feel about them once they're in pads. You're going to be covering it. What are you looking forward to this week from the rookie mini camp? What are you hoping to get out, or who's kind of on your radar that you're really kind of going to be focusing on?
Well, you know, you're never quite sure who's going to show up until you get there. And our availability is on Saturday. So, you know, we're expecting the draft choices to be there. But occasionally there are complications with school schedules, especially with, I think all of these guys except McCoy are seniors. So you have graduation in addition to finishing up the semester. Some are on quarter systems. And so, you know, occasionally you expect somebody to be there and they don't show up. And then occasionally the Saints will sign a free agent at the last minute. who you might know from college, might be a local player that you didn't expect to be there who shows up. So you're never quite sure who's going to be there or not be there until you show up on Saturday. You know, but having said that, you don't really learn anything from a football perspective at this thing. What you try and learn is a little bit about the individuals. The draft choices got on conference calls with us briefly after they were selected, so you get to talk to them. But this is an opportunity to see them face-to-face, to have a conversation with them, a little bit longer interview. So you get a sense of who's, what the personalities are like, how well-spoken they are, how outgoing they are, how confident they are, which can give you a sense of some attributes that may or may not possess outside of football skills that can be significant. I think the coaches get a lot of those same things. They try and simulate that at the combine and when they go to these draft days, when they talk to these players, maybe even look at a little film with them. But once they get them on campus, the Saints campus, that is, and sit down with them one-on-one and visit with them, talk with them, put them through some drills, they start to get a feel for what these guys are like. And I do remember last year, the conversation was in training camp, but Dan Roshar, the offensive line coach, I remember him talking both about Cameron Tom when he came down 2 years ago from Southern Miss as an undrafted free agent, and also Will Clapp from LSU, who's a seventh-round draft choice last year. And both of those guys immediately had an impact. I think Tom, with his physicality and versatility, when he came in, Roshar knew, I think within a matter of a few minutes, this isn't your typical undrafted free agent. This is a draft-quality player. We need to sign him before he leaves here because somebody else will sign him. And then I think they knew more about Will Clapp physically because he had played at LSU. But they, I think mentally, they learned a lot about him right away. And they said, wow, this guy's really sharp. He can pick up a lot of stuff. We did well to get him in the seventh round. So, you know, you pick up a little bit from talking to these guys, but sometimes you pick up more from talking to the assistant coaches and finding out what their initial impressions are.
We're speaking with Les East. He covers the New Orleans Saints and the New Orleans Pelicans for CrescentCitySports.com. Les, they did lock up another rookie earlier this week when they got return specialist slash wide receiver Deontay Harris from Assumption College. They got him on a three-year contract, the undrafted free agent. And this is a guy who's a sensational return man. He holds the NCAA's all-division record for career return touchdowns combined, punt and kickoff returns. And he also owns the single-season record with 8 return touchdowns back in 2017. I know he's tiny. He's only 5'6", 170 pounds, but this guy is sensational in open space. What do you think about the signing, and do you think he can make an impact for the Saints as a rookie?
Well, those are exactly the types of guys that you, or he's an example of the types of guys that you look for in undrafted free agents and guys to bring into a rookie mini camp. Someone who, in his case, he had 2 strikes against him. He's a small person physically, and he played in a small school. So that's why he was available, and yet that's what you're looking for, is to see who you can add who might have a chance to make the team, and in some cases maybe just creates more competition in training camp. But I think in this guy's case, with the stats he has, they want to see what he can do as a potential person to make the team. But it's somebody who didn't need to use a draft choice on because he had the 2 strikes against him. So you're looking for those types of guys who are long shots, and yet they have enough going for them that you think they might actually have a shot to make the team. And certainly with the success he's had as a return guy especially, you'd have to say that he has a chance. Very, very, very few people of that size make it in the NFL in any capacity, so that's why he's a long shot. But nonetheless, He obviously has some skills. I'm sure he's very fast. I'm sure he's quick. I'm sure he has good vision. So he has a lot going for him. The Saints need to upgrade the return game. So the bringing in of him makes perfect sense. We'll see. That's the type of guy, as long as he handles punts cleanly in practice, I think that's a guy you can't really evaluate till you get the preseason games. You have to see how he looks full speed against NFL-sized players. And you hope he doesn't have a red flag go up, such as him having trouble handling punts in practice or dropping the ball, something like that. But assuming no red flags go up, I just don't think that's the type of guy you're going to be able to evaluate until you see him in game action in August.
We're talking with Les East. Covers the Saints and the Pelicans for CrescentCitySports.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Les, Cole Tracy got himself an invite. He went undrafted. He had a tryout for the Green Bay Packers. They didn't sign him. Now he's down here with New Orleans. Look, the Saints have Will Lutz lined up. They gave him the contract extension. But is there any chance, remotely as it may be, that the All-American from LSU could possibly make this roster, or at least the scout team? What does he need to do during this little mini camp period for rookies?
Well, I think the main thing he has to do is just make his kicks, just be accurate. That's the main thing. That was his biggest strength at Ascension College, I believe, or Assumption College, I guess it was called, something like that. It was a small school. He was accurate there. He was very accurate at LSU. So he just needs that. That's his biggest strength at this point. Is being dependable and making kicks. So he needs to show that he's extremely accurate on a consistent basis and show what his strength is. And I don't think there's any chance he makes the Saints. He could possibly be signed to the practice roster. You know, he just has to be patient because place kickers more so than most conventional positions sometimes have to wait a long time. They may have to go to two or three training camps and they have to try out and be with four or five or six teams. You know, we took Will Lutz a while to find the right situation with the Saints. He couldn't latch on with the Ravens, among others, and wound up here, and now he's one of the better kickers in the NFL. So, you know, I think he just has to show the accuracy that he has. If he makes it on the Saints practice roster, fine, but he might be better off getting a chance somewhere else, and he'll probably get another chance if he doesn't sign any contract here. He'll probably have a chance somewhere else before training camp and then just keep kicking and keep working on his own. He worked with Morton Anderson for a while. Keep doing whatever he can to get better. And be patient. And I think he's got the potential to kick in the NFL, even if he's not on an active roster on opening day this year.
Les, he's not the only former LSU player that got an invite to the rookie minicamp for the New Orleans Saints. The other individual being safety and sometimes linebacker Ed Paris. Paris had, in a lot of regards, a disappointing career with the Bayou Bengals, but I know you're always looking for safety help, always looking for depth at defensive back. What do you think about Ed Paris and his opportunity here to make the squad or at least make the scout team?
Well, I think he, if I'm not mistaken, he had a few injury issues at LSU, missed some time.
Correct.
Over the course of his career. So the first thing he has to do is show that he's healthy and be out there every day. The last thing anybody in his position needs is to be on the sideline. So if he's healthy and able to do everything they ask him to do, that's a good starting point. The next thing he has to do is prove that he can help on special teams. And I think he's athletic enough that he probably is capable of doing that. That's going to be the first place where he's going to be able to make a mark. But he's going to have a difficult time. Two of their top three draft choices are safeties as well. So even though they have a need for some depth there, he's got two guys coming in who are well thought of at the same position. The Saints generally do a good job of being blind to how you got there and focusing strictly on what they see in your performance. Witness Pierre Thomas versus Antonio Pittman about 13 years ago. But so he'll be given a fair shot. But I would say his chances are not great because of the numbers game, but if he can make it on the practice roster, which I don't think is unrealistic, I think he might, then you have a chance. That's the main thing. You've got to show them enough that they are convinced, let's keep him around in whatever capacity we can because we see something there. And he's got to show them something, and special teams is the first opportunity he'll have to do that.
We're talking with Les East. He covers the Saints and the Pelicans for CrescentCitySports.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Les, we'll wrap it up with this. The Saints are always known with Mickey Loomis and Sean Payton, and now especially with Jeff Ireland, of doing a tremendous job of signing undrafted rookie free agents. And they're always considered some of the best in the NFL. And a theme, or trend, rather, is they always go after small school guys when they bring in these guys, whether it's the undrafted rookie free agents or the guys that they invite to minicamp. And just look at the guys that have not been signed but have just been invited. You're looking at guys that have played at Rocky Mountain, UAB, Northern Colorado, Townsend, Montana, North Dakota State. Why do you think that's worked so well? Is it just that they've done their homework and they're just that diligent when it goes to finding these diamonds in the rough, so to speak?
I think it's partly that, and I think it's partly having an open mind. Some teams, I think, whether it's subconscious or conscious, have doubts about guys who played at smaller schools. And those are going to be your best opportunities to find a diamond in the rough right now because the guys in the big schools are on tape so much. They go to all-star games, they play in bowl games, are on TV every week. There's just so much access to information about those guys, and there's a credibility that goes with playing at a big school. It's hard for a good prospect from a big school to slip through the cracks. It's a lot easier for a guy from a small school because people have doubts about why he's not at a big school, and then the fact that he's not on TV every week and people just aren't that familiar with him or his school or even his conference in some cases, it's a lot easier for a guy who can play to not get noticed prior to coming here. And so I think that's your best chance of finding a diamond in the rough because the guys do get overlooked at smaller schools a lot, and people question the level of competition they went against. So even if they have skins on the wall, people wonder if that's fool's gold because of who they played against. So it's a combination of those two things, but I think the Saints are at the forefront of being able to find players who have been overlooked for those reasons.
Les, appreciate the insight as always. Enjoy taking in rookie minicamp this weekend, and we'll talk about it next week, my friend.
Okay, thanks, Raymond.
Les East, CrescentCitySports.com, joining us there on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, former STM Cougar star earned All-SEC honors yesterday. It's time to give her a little bit of love right here on 103.7 The Game. In Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. Sometimes multiple lines are in one area. So if you or a contractor that you've hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or just for another reason, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. What happens then? Maybe you only knock the power out for your entire neighborhood, but sometimes there's an explosion with injuries and even death. It happens every year, and there's a very simple way to avoid it. Before you dig, call 811. Call 811 2 days before you dig. Tell the operator your address, and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. Simple, right? It's free of charge, and it's the law. Louisiana One Call operates 811 as a public service and to promote public safety. Louisiana One Call and 103.7 The Game remind you, call 811 and know what's below before you dig. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. 24 hours of sports coverage. You can give us a call if you'd like on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. Just a reminder, make sure to vote on our latest Twitter poll question. Do you think LSU has to win this weekend series at Arkansas for a chance to host an NCAA regional? We want your insight and your thoughts, so please share. Speaking of SEC, let's talk a little softball for a second. Alabama won the regular season championship. They led the way yesterday with the postseason honors. And the reason why I bring that up is because one of Acadiana's own was honored yesterday. That's right. Bailey Hemphill, the former St. Thomas More Cougar star, one of the best softball players I've ever covered in my entire career. It was her. She was dominant. Like, I watched her when she was a sophomore and a junior. Like, she's ready for college now. Like, if she could go early, if there was a thing where, like, you could just bypass and declare early, she was the one of the few players where I was like, yeah, she's ready. She's ready now. She can just go. And sure enough, she has played extremely well for the Crimson Tide. She earned first-team All-SEC honors yesterday. She was named to the first-team infield, the junior from right here in Lafayette, and the former St. Thomas More Cougar star. She's a utility player for the Tide. They like lining her up in the infield, sometimes as the designated hitter. And this is what she's done so far in her three seasons with the Crimson Tide. This year, she started in all 56 games. She earned at least one hit in all five games early in the season at the Trojan Classic, going 8-for-14 with three doubles and 11 RBIs. She earned first-team All-SEC honors. She is a finalist for the USA Softball Collegiate Player of the Year. That's right. Player of the Year, Bailey Hemphill, right here from Acadiana, is being considered as she is a finalist for the Collegiate Player of the Year from USA Softball. She was a second-team Academic All-American last year, and she earned second-team All-SEC honors last year as well, and she was on the All-Freshman team in 2017. There's talk of her earning All-American honors this season. So congratulations to Bailey Hemphill. She is having a tremendous, tremendous season for the Crimson Tide. She's batting, get this, she's batting only .372. .372 with 22 home runs. She has 22 home runs. And she's drawn 45 walks. Tremendous for the former SDM Cougar. So congratulations to her for earning first-team All-SEC honors. A reminder, speaking of STM, Delta Media's got you covered for the SDM Cougars baseball team. That's right. STM takes on St. Charles Catholic today in the Division II semifinals over in Sulphur. If they win, they advance to Saturday's championship round. You can listen to it live on Mustang. That's right. Right here on Delta Media. Mustang Radio will take care of you. Pre-game starts at 6:40. First pitch at 7 o'clock. So make sure to tune in for that on our sister station, Mustang. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll talk to Jacques Doucette, LSU baseball, Saints rookie minicamp, and much more right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Sports Network. We started off the show talking about LSU baseball and how critical this series is, this three-game series starting tonight in Fayetteville against the Arkansas Razorbacks. We're going to get more insight about this series and about the struggles of this year's LSU baseball team with our next guest. He's been the longtime sports anchor and reporter at WAFB in Baton Rouge. He's also the founder of the Red Rock and Blue charity organization. He's our good friend, one of the best in the business, Jacques Doucet. Jacques, how are you this morning, brother?
Hey, good morning. How are you doing?
Doing well. Look, you've covered this LSU baseball team quite a long time, Jacques, and you were there for Skip, and then you were there through Smoke, and you've been here for the, you know, for Paul. Can you explain or give any insight on what is going on, why this team seems to be so inconsistent?
Yeah, I think Coach Maneri throughout his years has always stressed the importance of pitching. And when a team goes on a winning streak, we've talked about, hey, you've got a lot of momentum. And he would always say, well, momentum is today's starting pitcher. And right now, I don't think they really have any pitching they can hang their hat on. Guys like Todd Peterson have not had the impact that you were hoping for before the year as a closer. And Zach Hess has bounced around everywhere. Caleb Gilbert, I think, has been abducted by a UFO, perhaps. these guys that were counted on at one time, and they just had numerous injuries. You know, the second somebody comes around, they get hurt. I mean, Cole Henry was winning Freshman of the Week awards and everything, and then he's got elbow soreness, so he's missing a third straight weekend. And Jaden Hill was a promising freshman that pitched really well to start the year, and then he's had arm soreness, been out for the whole year. Landon Marceau he's a true freshman, so to expect a lot out of him would be unfair. But a lot was expected out of him after the way he looked at fall ball. So I think a lack of consistent pitching. And then Mikhail Hilliard, he was coming on last year and then was shelved because of arm trouble. And I'm sure it's something we're going to have to dive into. I don't know if there's a great answer to why so many LSU pitchers right now have arm problems, but it really has been an epidemic. So I think pitching is the biggest reason why they've struggled. And then, I think they've hit all right, but then at the same time, when you roar back against Ole Miss on Sunday and you score 15 runs and you go out against Louisiana Tech and don't score a run into the seventh inning, and I don't know if they had four or five hits the whole night, they've been so anemic in these midweek games offensively. So there's a lot to point at.
We're talking to Jacques Doucet of WAFB. Jacques, what did you take away from yet another kind of players-only team meeting? This one occurred in the middle of the game there before the sixth inning against Louisiana Tech the other night when they got routed by the Bulldogs. This has happened more than a few times this season, and McNeese State was another example. They've had these where, hey, let's get it together, guys. Let's do this. And it so far really hasn't worked. These losses that they're suffering seem to have a carryover effect for whatever reason. You go back and you look at them losing, struggling against Missouri, and then they lost to UL in the Wally Pontiff Classic, and then they dropped the first game against Florida. There was a little bit of hangover there. There just seems to be – they have trouble flushing bad losses away. Why do you think that is?
Well, Raymond, I think, we're basically 50 games into the year, so it's going to be the 50th game of the year, and this rah-rah stuff – and the I don't want to call it gimmicky, but you know what I mean. This kind of Hollywood movie stuff. Hey, we're gonna have a big pep talk. I mean, you are what you are at this point. Now I've seen Charles Hanegrip was talking about it the other day and said the team that made it to the national championship series a couple of years ago, their record was almost the same as it was right now. But that team had Alex Lang and Jared Poche, you know, pitchers you knew you could count on. At this point right now, I mean, you've got, like I said, you got 7 games left to go in the regular season. If you win 1 at Arkansas, you beat UNO, and if you take 2 of 3 against Auburn, you're sitting at 34-22 overall, 17-13 in the SEC. They've always done well at the SEC tournament for whatever reason. They go to Hoover, Alabama, and they become a different team. I've seen some mediocre teams go over there and win the SEC tournament. So that could give them a big boost. But you'd ask me about why the losses, they don't get them out of their system. You know, they seem to kind of bounce around a little bit. You know, Friday night they had this electric win over Ole Miss. You know, Drew Bianco flips the bat against his dad, and Zach Hess is electric, and the crowd is just roaring. And then the next night they come out and they lay an egg, and they lose 5-1. And then, you know, Sunday they pull off this miraculous comeback in which they score 6 runs with 2 outs in the bottom of the ninth and hit 3 straight home runs. And then their closer can't be counted on. He comes out and gives up 4 runs in the top of the 10th, and you lose the game. So it's just been inconsistency across the board. And at this point, you know, LSU's kind of a toss-up as far as if they're going to host a regional or not. And businesses around here, when they hit the summer months and the students are gone and are kind of scrapping for pennies, when LSU plays until late June, that's a big boost to people in the local economy, and when they're playing at Elec Box Stadium. And if they're not playing at Elec Box Stadium for the 2nd year in a row, it's not going to make a whole lot of people happy.
We're talking with Jacques Doucet of WAFB here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jacques, we've been hearing grumblings for a little while this season from the diehard LSU fans, and I think you and I can both agree that a lot of the diehard LSU fans may be a little spoiled from the 90s era, the Gorilla Ball era of Skip Bertman, when they won 5 national championships. And it's just far more difficult these days than it was back in the 80s and the 90s, winning all those championships like Texas and Miami and Cal State Fullerton and LSU did. It's a different game. They changed the bats. The parks are a little bit different. The game is different in that regard. But do you feel that Paul warrants any of these calls about being on the hot seat, in your opinion, as someone who's covered the team as much as you have?
Well, I don't think under any circumstance there should be or would be a coaching change after this year. His contract goes until 2024, I believe, and
yeah.
He's getting paid, I think, $1.2 million a year. You know, Coach Maneri has kept the program at a very high level. You know, would I have liked to see them go to Omaha maybe once or twice more than what they have since he took over? Would it be nice if he had 1 more national championship? That would be nice, I think. He's a Hall of Fame coach. He's kept them at a high, like I said, I think they were a top 8 national seed 7 years in a row. The attendance hasn't gone down. I mean, maybe the actual crowds go down when a team's not doing well, but in terms of selling tickets, I mean, they're still leading the nation in attendance. But John Brady famously told me, what gets coaches fired is expectations. And when you're the preseason number 1 team, and you have all this talent coming back, and you've got Antoine Duplantis and all these guys coming back on a team and a great recruiting class, and you're sitting at where you're sitting right now, yeah, absolutely the coach is going to get criticism. They don't have a left-handed pitcher on the roster. They have some things to point out and say, well, why is that way? So I think he'll want some criticism. But at the same time, it's unfair to think that LSU just falls out of bed and makes it to Omaha every year. It's hard. It's hard to win. As Skip Bertman would say, you take a look at the coaches out there. Coach K and Coach Smith have got 5 national titles between them. Okay, it's hard. You know, it's hard to win, as Skip would say. So I do think he warrants some criticism, but there's a new athletic director. I think some fans see Scott Woodward and expect he's going to just show up on campus and fire every coach. That's not the way it works. He'll be watching. I mean, if we're sitting at this point again next year and LSU's in the same spot, then I think we need to perhaps have a conversation and say, okay, where is this thing going? But right now, I don't know. There's no way.
Jacques, bonus points, man. If you were in studio, I'd give you a fist bump for that Skip Bertman impression. Nice job. Nicely done. We're talking with Jacques Doucet of WAFB here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jacques, I want to switch gears a little bit. New Orleans Saints rookie mini camp is this weekend. Media availability will be on Saturday. Tell me a little bit, you know, what are you looking for when you go out there this weekend down there in Metairie to the training complex? What are you looking for? Are there any of the guys that they drafted, or maybe someone that went undrafted that they signed, or even someone that they just invited to camp? Who are you kind of looking for and seeing what they look like in, you know, shoulder pads?
Well, I think I'll be on my way to Sulphur. I think I'm going to cover all the state baseball stuff. But in terms of what you're asking, what I'd be looking for, oh, I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, my biggest question is, it won't be answered in camp. I'm just curious if Drew Brees can make it start to finish and play at a high level for one more year, or if he's running out of gas. You know, losing Mark Ingram to free agency is an interesting dynamic. I don't think that they upgraded him with the guy that they got in Murray. I think he'll be serviceable. But I do think that the Saints needed some more toys to play with offensively. I think, you know, when you're in the NFC Championship game and you're throwing the guys like Dan Arnold and hoping that they make touchdown catches, I think that Drew needed a new weapon or two, and I think that they've tried to do that. That's the big tight end they got from the Raiders, I think, right, Cook? I think that that's going to be a huge addition to the team. I want to see the way he plays and if he can be a weapon and how that's all going to go. So I guess those are just a few things that I'm looking at. You know, former LSU Tiger and Will Clapp, how's he going to do? Does he have a chance to, you know, kind of get some playing time and whatnot? I think Bro Bridge is on Draven Durrell coming off an injury. I guess he'd be fighting hard to try to make the team. So just a few things to think about as we're going into that. You know, big props to Devin White being the number one, the fifth pick in the NFL draft, and, you know, getting a $27-29 million, whatever it's going to be, contract. And you know, people like that work hard, and I'm also rooting for Nick Brossette, who went undrafted but got signed by the New England Patriots. Hopefully he'll be able to make that team as well.
Jacques, speaking of former LSU Tigers, apparently the Cleveland Browns are trying to become LSU of Ohio. you know, what do you think, you know, look, they got Jarvis Landry, and it's got Odell Beckham, and they're reunited again, and they're giving Baker Mayfield multiple weapons. And now, you know, they drafted Greedy Williams in the second round, and both Greedy and Odell have been talking a lot of, you know, Super Bowl. You know, Greedy's like, Super Bowl, and Odell Beckham is saying that he wants to help make the Cleveland Browns the New England Patriots. I love the bravado. It's good for both you and I, right? We can play those clips. But what do you think about just the attitude of these LSU players in Cleveland?
Well, I think it's a reflection of social media and Twitter and whatnot. When, you know, you get two star wide receivers on a team, and then people start talking about Super Bowl. I mean, it takes more than a couple of great wide receivers to make it to the Super Bowl. You know, how are you in the trenches? Is your offensive line going to protect your quarterback? Is your defensive line going to stop the run and get to the opposing quarterback? You know, how do you defend the pass? I mean, these are all questions. Now, certainly, I think that they are going to sell a lot more jerseys, and their viewership is going to go up, and the organization is going to make a lot more money, and they will be a lot better. You know, certainly covering Jarvis and Odell at LSU was a treat. I did not expect them, certainly not Odell. I mean, Odell was a great player at LSU, but I could have never imagined he was going to become this worldwide superstar that he became. And then when he made that one-handed catch on Sunday Night Football, a star was certainly born across the world. And Jarvis has always been a gritty, nasty player, just ultra-competitive. So it's good to see those two guys back together. You know, Greedy was a very good player at LSU. I think, LSU fans are selfish. They want to see their guys play in every game and win every game. I think the way that kind of ended with the Fiesta Bowl and Devin White going out and playing and Greedy not playing, a lot of people can't blame Greedy for doing that, but at the same time, it just wasn't quite the ending you would have hoped for. But I think a lot of people will be watching those Cleveland Browns when the Sunday ticket comes on, and they'll have the Saints on one TV, and a lot of people will be watching the Browns on another for sure. So it'd be good to, and you know, a lot of people just like Baker Mayfield. They just like his moxie, they like his attitude, they like the way he plays that quarterback position. So I'll certainly be watching him. Sure.
We're talking with Jacques Doucette of WAFB. Jacques, one last question before I let you go. You know, you're the founder of the Red Rock and Blue charity organization. When's the next event coming up that you guys are gearing up for, and where can people get more information about that?
Well, the big events always take place in the summer. Red Rock and Blue is a summer event. We started the softball tournament in my parents' backyard 25 years ago when I was a senior at North Vermillion High School there, and had three or four little teams. And now these days we have 100 teams that come in from all across the South, and that's going to be at Breck's Oak Villa here in Baton Rouge, June 28th through the 30th. If anybody out there has a slow-pitch softball team, whether it's co-ed, men's rec, a competitive team, please go to redrockandblue.com and register your team. You get a three-game guarantee, and all the money we raise we give to Louisiana Military Charity Organizations. Blue Star Moms of Louisiana support our war heroes. And we do the celebrity, sort of celebrity softball game that will be Friday, July the 12th at LSU's Tiger Park, where LSU plays softball. You know, an amazing facility and a great night. So check it out. And if anybody out there would like to sponsor and give some money to a nonprofit and do a great tax write-off, go to redrockandblue.com. All my contact information is there. You can call me up today.
Jacques, appreciate it, brother. Appreciate what you're doing there with your foundation, and thank you for making time for us, man.
Hey, I enjoyed it. Thank you.
That's Jacques Doucette, WAFB in Baton Rouge. Become an institution over there in the state's capital.
Yeah, our friend from across the basin, friend of the station, he comes on from time to time, Matt Moscona.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to check, but I believe he sucks really bad at this celebrity softball game. I used to listen to Moscona.
That sounds like something I would embrace.
Right. I used to listen to Moscona in high school because I lived on that side, and he would talk about it because, like they said, this thing's been going on forever since Jacques was in high school.
Right.
And I can remember Moscona. I think like the first 4 years he was involved, he played, and then like after that he was like, I'll coach the team, and then he's still like winless as the coach of one of the teams. So he's
nice.
It's poor effort there. I think Ryan Terrio coaches the other team or something, or used to.
Nice.
I gotta go check on that. Red Rock and Blue is awesome. It always comes with, or he tries to bring in a band. He didn't mention a band this time, so I wonder.
We'll bring him on again before we get a little bit closer.
Yeah. Well, I remember last year he said, because he always tries to bring in one of those 90s bands that we love, whether it's Marcy's Playground or Sum 41 or something like that. Those are the kinds of bands he tries to bring in. But he also said that it takes a large chunk away from the charity to bring in these guys. So maybe he's going to try to see this year how much money he can make without a big band to draw.
Maybe he should do karaoke and we'll have you display your skills.
Dude, should have been a cowboy? Watch out. I will sing should have been a cowboy. Like there is no tomorrow. That's my karaoke jam.
Oh, karaoke jam. There's so many layers to Cody Shoots. So many layers. We'll wrap things up here after this break. Old 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW, Channel 32.1, Stadium Sports Network. A little tidbit of information that came out yesterday, kind of flew under the radar, is that a Braden Hawkins, originally from North Carolina, JUCO quarterback, has committed to play for the Raging Cajuns. That's interesting. Does that mean that there's going to be more competition heading into fall camp at the biggest position on the team for the Raging Cajuns and Billy Napier this coming season? I don't know. We'll talk more about that with our good friend Tim Buckley on tomorrow's show, so make sure to tune in for that. I want to thank all of our guests, John Marques, Danny Morang, James Yasko, Les East, and, of course, Jacques Doucette. Reminder, tune in tonight on Mustang 107.1 STM State Semifinal Baseball live from Sulphur. Pregame 6:40, first pitch 7 o'clock. Let's see if the Cougars can advance to the state championship round on Saturday. Y'all be safe out there. Have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Sport of Politics is next, right here on 103.7 The Game.
Get carried away in style with limousine.